Thank you for those of you that came out, brave the cold. Those of you that are online, I hope you're staying warm. It was quite the morning this morning. It took me about 5 minutes just to get my truck started. So when Roger asked me to preach today, we're going through Ephesians. He's kind of trying to tie up all the loose ends, all the little things, because Paul has just packed this book so full of so many different things. He asked me to preach on this passage in Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 9, talking about slaves and masters. If you're in the ESV, the ESV likes to translate it bondservants and masters. But this passage is in a really weird spot. So last week, I believe Roger was talking about marriage, the relationship between a husband and wife. Right before these verses, it talks about children and parents. And then suddenly, there's this passage about slaves and masters, about bondservants and masters. And it's weird when you look at it and you think of it from, you know, a Western American viewpoint, because when I think, you know, when the word slavery, there's a lot of stuff going on with American history, with culture that, you know, there are images that just pop into your mind. But the thing is, and we see kind of in the placement of this, is that Paul's idea, Paul's view of this word, this use, is completely different than how we would look at it. Because in Roman times, and in the times that he's writing to, the people he's writing to, the slavery that they're talking about, the bond servants that they're talking about, are not like the chattel slavery that we have that's been through a lot of Western history for the past, you know, 500, 600, 700 years. Slaves in Roman culture were actually more servants. They lived in the household. It's why, as he's got this whole discord about the household, about husbands and wives, the relationship between children and parents, suddenly this slaves and masters passage comes in. So we see that it's more about a working relationship than what we would normally kind of think of. We see that he's addressing the workers in the household in verse 8. We can see, too, that it's applicable to us. Because he said, you know, uses the word whether he's slave or free. We'll get to that in a minute. But there are two big instructions that he's got going there. Instructions for both the slaves and instructions for the masters. And we'll see as we go through it that it is incredibly applicable to us today. So we start in verse 5. What Paul writes here is, bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart, as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers. So right away, Paul is talking about kind of a different attitude than we typically have in kind of a working relationship. Often, you know, there are two big reasons why I think we work, you know, in Western culture, why we work hard. One is to try to be a people pleaser, try to get ahead, try to please the people in front of, ahead of you, so that they would treat you well, that you can make advancements in your career. But what Paul's saying here is that instead we should obey with fear and trembling, similar to as you would Christ. That word fear there is the same as often, time and time again, it talks about the fear of the Lord over and over. It's not a cowering fear of retaliation, but rather fear is respect. But it's also not out of a desire for your own gain. So this last week, this last Sunday I was not here. I had the great opportunity to go to a conference for the American Football Coaches Association down in Nashville. Now this conference, there were a good 2,000 people there, 2,000 coaches from at every different level from all over the country. They had all got together, and it was great. We were talking football, we were talking, you know, talking work, had the opportunity to meet with a lot of people from the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, get to know other Christian coaches, both in the area and across the country. It was a fantastic conference. But what I found very quickly was that there's this culture that's going on, that people were using every interaction and every opportunity as a way to advance their career, a way to get ahead. There were a lot of people who were walking around just dressed up in suits because they were using every opportunity as a job interview. They were trying to, they would go and find the biggest name that they possibly could and then try to make themselves look really good just in the hopes that maybe if you've got an opening next year, can I come work for you so that I can eventually make it and then I could be big and I could be the best and I can make it to the league and or at the top of college football. And so many people there would step on whoever they had to get ahead. And what I found was actually that there were some interactions that we'd be talking and be having a great conversation, and then, you know, me coming from Little Crown College over in St. Bonifacius, Minnesota, we'd have a, be having a great conversation with the guy, and then someone would walk past with, you know, a big Alabama logo, and they'd be like, oh, sorry, I got to go talk to him. So everything about this culture and this conference is people just struggling to get ahead. They're struggling to do whatever it takes so that they can make the next step. They can make themselves look good. I can make myself look better than the guy next to me so that you'll hire me over him. And all of that is just in the opportunity to get ahead, to get further. And what Paul's talking about here is he's saying, don't do that. That's a waste of your time. It's a waste of your energy. It's a waste of your effort. You shouldn't work for the purpose of getting ahead. Rather, but, verse 6, work as bondservants or slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not unto men. There are two big ideas in verse 6 and 7, and this is kind of central to the whole passage, everything here. There are two big ideas that show up across all of Paul's writing that we find here. First is this idea of working as a slave to Christ. In Romans, Paul writes, but now that you, that is believers, have been set free from sin and have become slaves of God, the fruit you get leads to sanctification and in its end, eternal life. So much of his writing in Romans is talking about being released from the bondage of sin, but instead being tied to Christ, being tied to God, being a slave to God. So now suddenly in this passage, as he's writing to these people who are slaves, who are servants to people on earth, he's telling them to instead work as if they're slaves to God. Because all believers now are no longer slaves to sin. They have been purchased by the blood of Christ. Because to be a slave to Christ is to present yourself to Christ as a living sacrifice that is living in the righteousness and in the fruit of the Spirit. And Paul also talks in Ephesians, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man. Shows up again, time and time again. It's the other big idea here from this passage. Shows up time and time again through Paul's writing. In Colossians 3, which interestingly enough, he's also writing to the Colossian household in this. He has a lot of ideas and that show up over and over and over again because he's writing the same thing to a bunch of different people. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23, it says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Because what Paul understands, what Paul knows, is that your work is a testimony of who you serve. It's a testimony for the Lord. It's a testimony that you are a slave to Christ, and as in doing so, you are a reflection of what he has done in your life. Now, I had another interaction, fantastic interaction at this conference. There was a coach from Texas at a smaller Division II school down there that we were just talking football. He's an offensive line coach just like me, so we were talking all kinds of different stuff. But just casually, you know, I just mentioned like, okay, he seemed different. I'm like, so what, you know, what about you trying, you know, do you want to make a move up? Do you want to go to a bigger school? Are you here trying to find a job interview, anything like that? And he's like, no. His words were, I've thought about moving up, but right now, I know that God has placed me here, so I'm going to do the best where I'm at. See, the crazy thing about this is before this point, he had never heard of Crown. He didn't know anything about Crown. Before we started talking, I didn't even mention that Crown is a Christian college. This was just something he offered up willingly because he knew that his testimony, his work for God was a testimony for who he is. His focus wasn't on people pleasing. It wasn't on getting ahead. It was on being present, being where he's at, and in his work glorifying God. We had, you know, that dove into a bunch of other stuff. We started talking about his faith, and I found that he was doing things. He's at a state school, so he didn't have some of the same opportunities that we do at, you know, at Crown, at a private Christian college. But what he was doing was, before their Sunday evening meetings where they would go through film, he invited all of the people, all of his players, if you want to come early, we're going to have a Bible study. Come about a half hour early. You don't have to come. I can't mandate it. He said that most of his guys, they showed up. Even the ones that weren't believers, they came because they wanted to learn more. And all he was doing was just outwardly working at great effort, outwardly working with his faith. He wasn't concerned about people pleasing. He was concerned about doing a good job, and he was concerned about honoring God. And this countercultural attitude stuck with me as a major testimony of his faith. But okay, so why work hard? Why work, you know, for God when we might not get anything in return? It's really easy to say, I'm getting the bare minimum out of this job. They're only paying me so much. I'm not working, you know, going to work extra hard to try to prove myself when I know that what I'm doing isn't going to be recognized, when I know that what I'm doing isn't going to come back. It's a big struggle. Paul addresses that. He does not end with just saying, just do it. He says in verse 8, then he says, whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is slave or free. Paul knows, too, that God is just, and he will repay good for good. That might not happen in this world. You know, I'll be honest with you. I think we all know that, you know, sometimes you work hard, you serve God, and still life here is a struggle. I'm not going to sit up here and preach a prosperity gospel to you that if you just believe it, wealth will come in and flow. God does provide, but he doesn't always make it easy here. But I do know that God is just, God repays good, and in the end, it will be incredible. And Paul knows this here. Also, in this verse, he has a little addendum because he's been talking all this time. He wants to make sure that we know that this command is for everyone. You know, this little clause that he just throws in, I think, out of the blue. He gets to the end and he's like, whether he is slave or free. Paul's been talking this whole time about working, putting forth your best effort. And then suddenly he's like, oh yeah, also, by the way, this isn't just applicable to the slaves. This is for everybody. So we can know as we look at this passage with full reassurance that maybe this wasn't written to us, but it is incredibly applicable for us. But Paul doesn't end this with the instructions for the slaves. He then turns and has a quick verse at the very, very end of this passage that's instructions for the masters. He starts with immediately, masters, do the same to them. Every instruction he's had before that point, everything that he's done saying, work hard, put forth your best effort, work as a testimony to God, all of that is just as applicable when you're the one in charge. Because it's not just about serving the one that's above you, it's also serving below you because, he writes, God is your master just as much as he is theirs. It doesn't matter your situation. It doesn't matter your status. Every single person in this room is under God. And if we're working for him, we just need to understand that. It also says that we need to treat without the threatening, without the violence. We need to treat those that work for us, treat those that we're in charge of with respect. Another thing that I saw at this conference was that there are some coaches who will berate their players. They will get after them. They will, you know, call them names, cuss them out, all of this stuff, just in the attitude of motivating them. Well, if I yell at him and he doesn't like it, then he's going to try harder so that he doesn't get that next time. Well, the thing is that doesn't really work. Because the best coaches care for their players. The best bosses care for their employees. The best masters care for their servants. Because in all of my experience, I've found that players will do so much more for a coach, for a boss, anything that cares about them. They will go above and beyond with that. The best coaches might get forceful and they might get stern when it's necessary, but ultimately the players know that they're cared for. If you talk to the people that are underneath this coach from Texas, I am sure that if I talk to any of his players, they'd be like, yeah, this guy cares about me. He cares about me. I'm going to do my best because I know that he would do the same for me. Paul continues, and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him. Again, God is supreme above all. God does not care about your wealth. God does not care about your status. God does not care about your position. When it comes to the day that you must give an account to God, he's not going to excuse behavior because, oh, I was in charge of them, so that means that I could treat them however I wanted. He doesn't care. There's a song that from about 2002 that pops up once and again on my playlist, and there's a line that sticks with me and immediately came to mind. It says, we're getting closer to a God who's not short on cash. It doesn't matter what you have in this life because you're not going to be able to get there and pay him off. So God is not partial. There's no partiality. So stop your threatening. Do not abuse those that are below you. All this to say in this passage, the core of this passage is that your work is a testimony for God. God is over your whole life. He's the master over everything that you do. He's the master over those that you work for. He's the master over those that work for you, even if they don't know it. In your work, in what you do in the day-to-day, work as if you're working for Christ himself. Put the effort forth as if Christ himself is the one in charge, and you are just trying to serve him to the best of your ability. To those that you're in charge of, do the same. Display Christ's love. It's amazing the amount of testimony that you can have over those that you're in charge of when they see that you treat them differently than everybody else. Because ultimately, though you were a slave to sin, you have been purchased by Christ's blood. You are no longer owned by sin. You're no longer owned by status. You're no longer owned by men's approval. You're no longer owned by wealth. You do not need to work for any of those things because they cannot rule over your life. Instead, work for the one who purchased you. The God of the universe who came to sacrifice himself so that you might be redeemed and have relationship with him. In all those things, you need to work as if you're working for the Lord. That's the core of this passage. That's the central idea to that. Paul is saying that in your relationships, your focus needs to be on the one who purchased you. That's why these slaves that were just a part of the household, that's why it's applicable to everyone, whether it's slave or free, all of this is that we just simply need to work for the Lord. Now I'm going to invite Lauren back up. I'm going to pray today. And just want to think about in this last song the work that Jesus has done and how incredible it is that we can display that through the work that we do in this world. God, I thank you for your salvation. I thank you for your grace. Lord, I pray that in everything we do, that we can remember who you are, we can remember who you have saved, that you have saved us, that you have saved those that are around us. Lord, I pray that we focus, that we keep our eyes on you in our work, we keep our eyes on you in our households, we keep our eyes on you as we interact with those around us. Pray again, and I thank you for your grace and your mercy. Amen.